And welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with Daniel.
And Daniel.
Daniel, welcome. First one of 2021.
Wow, I thought we were going to say we were going to be consistent there for a minute.
Well, you know, we said it. We consistently said that we were going to be consistent. And on that day, we were. And that's what really matters. So, let's just jump right into why we had... There was a family emergency on my end. And then plus the holidays, and we're still locked in, and I started a new job on top of that, so...
Working from home now, which takes a lot of, you know, resources and stuff like that.
So right. That's understandable. Yeah. Yep, everyone in my family, no joke, I think each member of my family streams two different devices at the same time, all at the same time. my son will be on his phone, he'll be streaming YouTube up on his TV and then playing a game on his computer all at the same time. My daughter will be like video chatting, Zoom calling with her friend while having music playing in the background, and then my wife will be watching like Facebook video and then streaming it to the TV because we're not efficient enough at this, you know, so we're just gonna make it insane.
Well, it's not just that, like, between you and your wife both working from home,
yep,
on the computer.
Yep.
Kids doing virtual study.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a taxing thing, and when we get down to it, it's a little much to try to get together and screen time some more.
Right, exactly.
Me, not as much of an issue, but yeah, I get it.
Yeah, well, the good news is, today was the first day where I was out of training. You know, I still have, like, training I'm doing, but I'm actually doing the work.
Nice.
Yeah, so... I work a lot, like, more normal hours, and we can actually get some of these, like, evening shows together. Midweek, afternoon shows, that's pretty much done. That ain't gonna happen anytime soon. So what we're gonna do today, and you'll notice it, if you're watching us live, you're gonna see us film two episodes back-to-back. And this is gonna be quite an ordeal. We have our water ready to go.
Our coffee going over here. Yeah. The thing is, what we need to let people know, too, normally we record three different types of podcasts. We do the Chits and Giggles topic one when we're talking about different things. We also do our topic debate. Those are staying. Those are going to be what we record tonight and possibly next week and so forth. Whenever there's a possibility of us to bring back Board Game Breakdown, it's usually going to be if we get an interview to take place.
Right.
Right now, it's just easier for us to record two of our podcasts on one night, and then while we edit during the week and record again. It's simpler. Doing a third one is just going to be taxing for both of us.
Cool. It's going to be too much, but that's okay. We can spare one day a week.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Exactly.
And we'll see.
Maybe.
we'll find out. Let's be real. We don't know.
We don't know. We're going to try to be consistent, but you just never know. Life happens. Family happens. This is the type of situations that are going to go on. It didn't help with the holidays, which were different this year. We spent more time on our devices talking to family than actually being with family.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, as silly as this is going to sound, for the next 10 minutes, well, maybe 5 minutes, it's good to see you again. You know, I've genuinely missed this, and I'm sure you're going to make me regret that statement here real soon, as soon as we get to that top eight debate tonight. But
just remember, you're always wrong.
We'll see. I was going to give you the 5 minutes, but... Whew.
No, just in all jest, we haven't really interacted for a while.
Yeah, it's been too long. Exactly. Like, we haven't even done, like, video chat hardly. We've just been absolutely off the wall. But... Yeah. The good news is, my income of games, that hasn't slowed down.
Nor has mine. In fact, mine's been increasing since lockdown started, when it happened. I bought more in the last year than I had the whole year beforehand.
I feel like I'm about the same. Like, so, I'm lucky because I have kids that I, you know, will ground and then from electronics, and then they have no choice but to play games with me. And because of that, I've been playing so many games, and they've been really good about getting games off my shelf of shame. But I had 50 games on my shelf of shame, like, 3 months ago. And we've been constantly, like, taking games off the shelf, just playing them. I'm like, all right, let's just try this, let's try this, let's try this. Now I'm down to 60 games on my shelf of shame. Because I have still been buying too many more.
Yeah, see, I haven't been that bad, but my shelf of shame was down to, like, four games before all this started. I'm like, oh, all right.
Mr. Single Digits over here.
Yeah, I was down to single digits. I was quite happy. And then now I'm in double digits. I think I have like 20 games on my shuffle shame, if not more. And that's including me getting some off my shelf by playing solo. Some of the other ones that I've talked about are, that I'm going to be talking about a little later. Hanging out with my wife and playing two-player games and stuff like that. Or playing over Zoom or Top Simulator if possibility. Board Game Arena is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, Board Game Arena. So, Daniel, I have a question for you before we get into, like, the design. And this is just a philosophical question. So you and I both engage in the Shelf of Shame.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a bunch of yes or no. You tell me if this would go on the Shelf of Shame.
Okay.
Okay?
Wait, for my Shelf of Shame or your Shelf of Shame?
Your Shelf of Shame.
Okay.
I want to see if ours align. Okay. A base game you haven't played yet. Ever.
A base game I haven't played yet? Yes, that would go on my Shelf of Shame.
Right. Okay. What about a base game that you have played but not played that copy?
No, I wouldn't put it on the shelf of shame. I've played it. I know I like it. I know I'll get it played. It just goes straight into my shelves.
An expansion for a base game that you have played, but you haven't played the expansion.
I never put the expansions on the shelf of shame.
What about an expansion to a base game you haven't played?
I wouldn't have an expansion to a base game I haven't played because who knows if I like the actual base game.
Okay, so you, like, straight up would not buy an expansion for a game that you haven't played yet?
I would not buy an expansion for a game I haven't played yet, no.
Okay. All right, what about a promo card? Okay, no, that's silly. Now, what about a variation or a re-theming of a game you already have? And have played.
If I've already played the game and it's a re-theming of it, I'm just going to go with, Century Spiteful versus Century Golem.
Mm-hmm.
Give me one sec here.
Yeah, looks like your internet's freezing up a little bit, but it's not too bad. You might be back by now.
Yeah, no, it looks like it's back. Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
Apparently, my internet connection is unstable, so I'm going to go yell at my wife.
I know. Nobody else is in the house right now except for my son, and he's grounded from electronics. So, we should be good. No, alright, so to clarify that, not just like a vanilla straight up re-theme like Century Spice Road. Oh yeah, actually, so Century Spice Road and Century Golem Edition.
I put that on my shelf of shame because I have played the Spice Road. I just prefer the Golem Edition, so I would put that on my shelf since I played it already. It's exactly the same game.
What about a sequel or a predecessor to a game that you've already played? Like, let's say you've played Azul first, but then Azul 2 comes out and you haven't played that. Would that go on the Shelf of Shame?
Yeah, that probably would, because it's going to play differently than something I've already played. So, like, going with the Century line, I played Century Spice Road, and I have played all three of the Century games, the Spice Road ones. So, if I bought myself the second one and haven't played it before, then yes, that would go on my Shelf of Shame, because it does play different. It still has some of the feel that Century does, but Eastern Wonder? No, it's Eastern Wonders.
Yeah, Eastern Wonders. Yeah, so then,
plays differently because it's more about pick up and deliver.
Gotcha, okay. Now I want to give a quick shout out. We had another couple followers since last time, and I still have more questions for you. But Tuna Sheriff, thank you for following us. That was 16 days ago. Tippy AK47, that was 7 hours ago, and Goldfinch Gamers just followed us right now, so thank you so much for that. Yeah, you guys rock. So what about an IP added onto a base game and some slight changes? So for example, if you've played base Catan, what about Star Trek Catan? Not Starfarers, but Star Trek Catan.
Honestly, I don't know how I feel about that one, because it's pretty much the same game, with a little bit add-ons, but it's a different theme. So, if we're talking like regular Catan and Starfarer's a Catan, then I put Starfarer's on there, because I played that one before.
Yeah.
But to me, Star Trek is basically you're going down like the Golem Road of Century, where it's pretty much the same game. They just change what certain things are. And the only difference really for me that I've seen with Star Trek Catan is that you have the powers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's just the extra characters. And I have Star Trek Catan, and I have Game of Thrones Catan, and I'm really struggling whether I want to keep them on the Shelf of Shame.
Cause, see, I don't know the difference between Game of Rhone's Katan and say regular Katan. Now, if it's exactly the same and does the same thing as Star Trek, I wouldn't put it on. But if it plays completely different, like we were comparing Katan to Starfarer's Katan, then yeah.
Do you require that you've had to play at least one physical copy of it? So, for example, if you have a base game and you've only played the app, is it on your shelf of shame still?
That's a trickier one, because I usually play the game before I play the app. So the only game I've never played a physical copy of is Amira.
Okay. I can fix that. I'll lend it to you.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So I guess I wouldn't count it. I'd count the physical play of the board game itself. Because sometimes the app does things a little differently. It doesn't do a complete reiteration of certain games. The one I'm thinking about is like Star Realms. The app felt different to me than the actual game itself when
It first came out. Yeah, less shuffling. The reason I asked that is because I also own Root, and I've played the app a couple times, and I don't feel like super proficient in it, but I'm debating whether I want to include that, because I also haven't played a multiplayer. I've only ever played it. Oh, so here's another one. Do you keep it on the shelf of shame if you've played it solo only?
Yes, I take it off the shelf of shame.
Okay.
If I played solo. That's how my Pendulum got off the shelf of shame.
Okay.
I like it solo, but it's no longer on my shelf for that reason. Because I have played it. I have played physical copy of it.
Okay. Alright, that makes sense. Cool. Man, that's a heck of a... Can you think of any other examples of... escape rooms. Like unlock or exit. Keep those on the shelf?
Or we're not going to be talking about a little bit later. I have the unlocked, the one I have left is the pirate theme one, where everything I heard, you end up splitting the party on that one. I haven't played that one yet, but I've played two other ones that I had with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have it on my shelf of shame, it's just in like my card box, and so yeah. I don't consider it, because I know the basis of the game, and once I'm done with it, it's going to go away anyway, so.
Right, yeah, see
it's
that.
It's not going to take up...
I decided to make my own shelf for just the escape room ones, just because I couldn't justify it either way. And then also, I bought one of those 3-pack boxes of unlocks. And I played 2 of the 3. Like, does that stay on the shelf?
They're all in one box, so.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you just play one of them that comes out of the box, then you've played the other two. It's not much difference. It's you're matching this to this. You're doing this. You're doing some puzzles. Yeah, the puzzles are a little different, but it's the same.
For sure. Cool. Yeah, no, I just thought this was a super interesting topic that I brought up to our Facebook group that we normally bring up, but I couldn't justify, like, my reason. But there was one comment that I really enjoyed, and he was like, you bought it. You do what you want. Put it on whatever shelf you want. It doesn't matter. I was like, I love that comment. It is not helpful with what I'm trying to get an answer for. But that was awesome. So, with that being said, I know we're about to get into our Designer Dream Team topic today. That's what we're going to be talking about. But before we do, we have had quite a chunk of time to play games, and we've been playing a lot of different stuff. So, we're going to limit each other down to, like, 3 or 4.
Yeah, I'm keeping it to just 4 games that I've played over the time, and if we meet next week, I'll add some more games and stuff like that.
Right.
Because I honestly think the Dream Team is going to take up a good chunk of our time.
I feel it will.
We got 16 designers to talk about.
Technically, each.
So 32 designers, maybe. I think there's going to be certain designer crossover, not exactly in the same.
How many crossovers do you think we'll have between us? How many designers total?
I'm going to say probably 2. Maybe 3.
I'm going to say 4.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see who's closer. Loser buys drinks tonight. Anyway.
Alright, I'll get you a bottle of water.
Alright, sounds good. And I will get out of my own fridge just to celebrate. I want you to take a water bottle from your fridge and throw it away, and I will drink one of my own. It will count that as you giving me a bottle. Alright. That's silly. So, but before we do that, Daniel, what have you been playing?
So, the 4 games I went with, and technically mine's a little bit a cheat because one of the games I'm going to talk about, it's the same game, and I played two of that game, what we were just talking about. But okay. I'm going to start with my favorite game that I've been playing recently. Mm-hmm. You know it. I've talked to you about it slightly, that I've got my wife to start playing Gloomhaven again with Jaws of the Lion. I reset the thing. Yep. Started because I was playing solo. We got the campaign going, and wow, is it good. Oh, my God. We started around Christmas, just after Christmas, and we're probably about 11 plays into it now, and that's starting from the beginning all the way through.
That's Jaws of the Lion or the base?
Jaws of the Lion.
Wow.
So I figured we might as well just play Jaws of the Lion because it's supposed to be the prequel, and then we may go back into the base, we'll see what happens, but the campaign, so far, I'm really liking it. I like some of the changes that they made to not just the onboarding, but like, hey, you finished the scenario, here's some experience. It helps you get that grind out of the way, because sometimes in the first box we were playing, it took forever. We felt like we were at level 2 forever. It didn't feel like we were making any progress. This one, where I think my character's already at level 4.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's
not insignificant, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I love the characters that come in the box, the 4 base characters in that one. They all are really unique. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm just happy to be playing Gloomhaven again. There is a reason why the first one is my favorite game. And this is just reiterating, this to me is just more Gloomhaven, and I'm really enjoying it.
Awesome. Yeah, good
choice. I also have to say, I like the map books. It just makes table cleanup so much easier, and I highly recommend Gloomhaven Helper to anybody who's playing it.
Yeah, even, I haven't been doing Gloomhaven Helper, and I feel I should, but
it just makes the setup so much easier, because all the monster stuff is just on that app. You draw their cards on that app as well, so it just makes things so much simpler.
That's awesome. Very cool. Good choice.
Oh, yeah.
I need to bust out mine some more. It's sitting right behind me, right over my shoulder, over here.
Oh, forgot to mention, I am no longer in my game/dining room. I am now in my office. The soundproofing work I'm working on right now, but...
Soundproofing and the electrical conduit you're working.
Yeah, I don't know about what I'm going to do about that, but we're going to try to get that work done.
Yeah.
Just to let our video listeners know, if I go dark, we're just going to run with it.
Yep, we're just going to go with it.
As long as my battery will allow.
Right. So, the game that I've been playing a lot lately, and I've probably played it about 5 or 6 times in the past couple weeks, my kids have been so obsessed with Among Us lately, and that they play with their friends, you know, they're just having it, and so much that it's a meme in our house now, where I'll just randomly call my kids sus, you know, like, you're being awfully sus, right?
Yeah.
It's so fun. And they're like, it's such an original, fun idea. I'm like, it's not original, but yeah, I get why.
It's a deduction game. It's what it is.
Yeah. And so I told him, I was like, look, like, let me show you the game it's kind of based off of. So I showed him One Night Ultimate Werewolf. Mm. Right? Oh my God, they love it. It is so funny. Like, they were so unsure that first game or two. But as soon as I started, like, completely blaming my son, it's like, I heard you move that piece. You can't tell me you didn't move that piece, because I know you did. Like, you got to be quieter, and now I know you're a werewolf because of it. How do you like those? And then I'm just, like, turning my kids against each other. It's so fun.
Danny's the werewolf.
I was for one of them. But oh, God, it's so fun. And it's such a good design. And then, as we were playing with it, I would always open up the box, because I have, like, two. I have Daybreak, I have the Vampire one, I have at least those, and I would just dump out all the pieces. And then I thought, wait, I have a 3D printer. I don't normally print out inserts, but this is a good idea for an insert. So I printed out an insert for it, and it works pretty well. And nice. So, I've been playing One Night Ultimate Werewolf quite a bit with my kids.
That's good. That's one of the reasons why I didn't like Among Us, because it is a social deduction game, and mm-hmm. we all know how I feel about that.
Yep.
I have friends who play that all the time, and they really enjoy it, and I tell them, have at it. That's what you like. There's another YouTuber who says this, like what you like, but don't be a
jerk.
Yeah, there you go.
Don't be a poopy face.
I don't like it, but hey, if everybody else loves it.
Yeah, why not?
All right, so the next game on my list, and this is the one I was telling you that's a bit of a cheat because it's two games. But they're the same game. It's Avengers game. I've played both The Dungeon and Monochrome Geek. And oh my god, this is such an amazing game. I've had a blast playing this one, both of them. The Dungeon is really good, but it's simple. It's supposed to be like the first one out of the style, if I remember correctly. So it's just, it's the ease people into it. So it's like, oh, this, and you can't really fail it all that well, bad.
Right.
But the difference is, when I started playing Monochrome Inc., oh my god, the puzzles to that were a little bit more difficult. That like, oh, I need to put this. Okay, wait, I found this. Okay, let me combine this over here, and then I can go do this over here. And, oh, wait, that unlocked this area over here. Oh, okay, let's go check this out. Oh, no. We messed with that thing over there, so now we can't succeed on that part. So, hey, take these endings out.
Right. So I was going to ask you about Monochrome Inc., because I haven't played that one yet. I do own it, but I haven't played it yet. How do you compare the two? Which one do you like better?
Monochrome Inc.
Really? Wow, that was
fast. Hands down, I like Monochrome Inc. better. The Dungeon, I would rate probably a 6 or a 7. It's fun. It's good. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Monochrome Inc., I would put up there in the 8s or 9s. Wow. I really enjoyed the puzzles on that. It's a little bit more difficult than the other one. And so, it's great. I do have to say, if you're going to play this one and you don't want to read a lot, get the app. Tames and Cosmos have an app on it, and the narration on it is great. All you got to plug in is the numbers it tells you to plug in, and set it off. And I enjoyed it. It was great.
Yeah, they did a good job of turning a very text-heavy game into like an audiobook.
Well, they basically turn a point-and-click game that you used to play on your computers.
Right.
And turned it into a card game. And I like it better than a lot of the escape room games that come out. I like it better than Exit. I have to say I probably like it better than Unlock, the two that I've played for sure.
Yeah.
That's how much I really enjoy it, because I like the puzzle aspect of it. I'm plugging these numbers in. Oh, this happened. Okay, now we get this item. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's another Phil Walker Harding that you have on your list now. So.
Yeah, I mean, this one's Phil Walker Harding and Matthew Dustin, so it fits because there's a dream team right there.
There's a dream team right there, exactly. No, they make great stuff together. The next game that I've been playing is one that I found at a thrift store, and I was just going to pass it by, but I was like, you know what, whatever. It's a game called Sky Joe. The name makes no sense at all. It's just colored cards, and the cards are numbered from negative 2 to 12. And the idea, yeah, I know, they're weird numbering, and they're mostly like 10 copies of each card, but some of them will have like, I don't know, like 15 copies, depending on the number. Here's what's weird about it. Your ultimate goal is you're trying to go for golf. You're trying to have the lowest total number you have, total number of all your cards. And you have a 4x3 grid in front of you, and all the cards start being face down except for two. Two of them go face up. On your turn, all you're simply going to do is either draw a card, either the top card of the discard pile, or the top card of the deck. Okay? When you draw a card off the top of your deck, you can choose one of two things. You could either discard it into the discard pile, in which case you have to take one of your face down cards and reveal them face up. If you instead decide to exchange it for one of your cards, whether face up or face down, you replace it with the replaced card, that card goes into the discard pile face up for the next player. So you might replace like a really low number because you're like, oh, well, that's a 2, that's not bad. And it discarded negative 2, here you go, to the next player, you know. But there's two catches to it. I mean, that's a very simple concept already, right? But there's already two catches to it. The first is if you ever have a single column of three cards that are all the same numbers, gone. Doesn't matter what the values are. So if you have three 11s, buy 33 points. Simple. And then the second thing is the player who triggers the end game is the first one to flip all their cards face up. Okay? The player who does that gives everybody else one turn. And then, if they were the lowest valued, then they're fine. But if they were not the lowest valued total, their score is doubled.
Oh, man.
It's surprisingly fun. Like, I totally, like, would have expected a bottom shelf game with it. Like, picking it out, it doesn't look all that impressive. But I saw some reviews, and they were mostly moderate. And I was like, okay, I can dig this. And we played it, and me and my kids have been having an absolute blast playing it. It's really, really fun. So, Skyjo. Who knew?
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So, my third game that I'm going to talk about, I've talked about it quite a few times. Probably, I think I talked about it in our last podcast I recorded, Chits and Giggles. And that is Wingspan. I've been playing it. As you can see above me, I've got the most recent expansion, Oceania. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I have played with the Oceania. And I love the new boards. I really do. Some people like them, some people don't. I enjoy them. I get why some people don't like the new Nectar.
The Nectar tokens, right?
The Nectar tokens. Yeah. And, yeah, I can get it. It is a bit overpowered, but I like them. They're enjoyable. They make it fun because of some of the new stuff that's coming in. I got everything mixed in now.
Yeah.
So there's just a mass of birds. And I like the new in-game powers that the birds have that were added in the Oceania expansion. So some of them are like, hey, it's in your thing. If you have so many of these birds, then you get this many points or so forth and so forth, stuff like that. So yeah. Not only do you have the in-game goals, you have in-game birds that help you get more points. And there's nothing wrong with just getting more and more points. And I enjoy it. So I'm not going to go too much onto it because I've talked too about it. Plethora of times, though I am happy because I just got an email from BGG, Board Game Geek Store. They're going to have the Nectars here sometime soon. So
yep, I saw those.
The upgraded bits.
I know. I just recently got all my upgraded bits. Oh man, you got to see those Targi bits. Those are.
They look nice. Really good.
Man, I've never spent so much on not so much.
Yeah, you spend so much on non board games, just components.
Right. The next one I want to talk about, speaking of good components, check this out. I'm going to do a little show and tell. Sorry, audio listeners, by all means, I encourage you to check this out, or at least check out the webpage, because this is a game that I just got from Kickstarter from some friends of mine. They are Thing 12 Games, and they just sent out Dinos Not Assembled to all their backers. Dinos Not Assembled is a very simple family weight game about building dinosaurs. Okay? I want to show some of these components, because this is some nice stuff. I love the UV spot ink on this, by the way. I don't know if I can get it to shine.
And by the way, I'm looking over on our Twitch stream, because I have you, like, that small on my screen, so I can't see the box.
The rule book says how to assemble dinos. I love that. Right? And then I don't know if they'll do this in the retail version. I don't think so, but I know they definitely do this for the Kickstarter version. They included a coloring book. Like, it's beautiful. Adorable. Yeah. But then...
You're not going to give it to your kids to color, though, are you?
I got some extra copies, and they are coloring it, yes. But then, this holds the tiles of the dinosaur bones. It's the dirt bag.
Nice. By the way, did you get one for your wife as well?
A dirt bag? I don't think she would enjoy that.
A coloring book.
Oh, maybe. Then we have the tiles themselves. Okay, these are good UV ink tiles. They're bigger than Carcassonne tiles. Huh?
Yeah, they married a
dirtbag. Jeez. All right, I'm just going to keep going. Trudging along. Then you have some that are like red that are... I think this is red. Daniel, help me out here. Is this red?
Asking... I don't know. I'm not on that screen yet.
Yeah. Those tiles are the more rare ones. Right. And so you have... the actual center board, which shows the museum and shows all the spots for each of the players to put their dinosaurs. Your goal is to build 3 dinos, okay? Then you have your individual player boards, which every player has one of these, where you keep your cards and you can keep up to 4 of the pieces themselves, okay? I'm just jumping through it real quick just to show you the idea. And then you're going to be building these dinos, which if you look, amazing art. I love this art. The Velociraptor.
It's quite nice art.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing a little bit there, I'm going to see it bigger over here.
But. Yep. And then it has the 3 pieces of fossils that you need to build them. each. But here's... I
mean, that's a bit too of an adorable velociraptor, but it is adorable.
Just wait. Because then the starting player gets a giant claw or tooth. I'm not sure. But it's, this thing is massive. Look how big it is compared to the size of my head. Now, granted, it's a lot closer to the camera, but it's not much smaller.
put it more towards back to your head, because when I first saw you pull it up, it looked pretty big.
Yeah. And then the final thing I got to show you, these pieces are amazing. Dino meeples. Dino meeples.
I mean, don't get me wrong, those meeples look really nice, but they're not as adorable as the tiny meeples and tiny epic dinosaur.
Yeah, but the thing is, these are a lot bigger, they're screen printed, and they match the illustrations. And they're screen printed on both sides, too.
So, I got a question.
Yeah.
Is there Stegosaurus?
Yes, there should be. I think, maybe. Right. Hold on. I can find out for you in just but a moment, but let's see here. Cause
all that matters, there better be a Stego in there, because that's the best dinosaur.
There is a pink Stego. Pink and purple Stego.
I'm fine with the color combination.
Yeah, that's a good color combo. There's a Stego. You got it. They got you, man. They got you.
Do they have a Spinosaurus?
A what now?
A Spinosaurus.
Spinosaurus. I'm not familiar with a Spinosaurus, but...
It's the one with the big cell on its back.
The big... Oh, that thing.
Yeah, that's my wife's favorite, so...
Your wife might not like this game as much. I don't think so. But honestly, the variety that they have in here and the fact that they have all the dino meeples, the components are phenomenal. And from what... I mean, the Kickstarter was inexpensive. But from what I understand, the retail price is going to be pretty inexpensive as well. But yeah, man. Good quality stuff. I just want to show that off because not only are they good people over there at Thing 12, like, they make good games too. So go check it out. I'm slightly biased, I know. But I do like their work. Yeah, they're hilarious, too. If you ever get a chance to meet them at a convention, do it.
Yeah.
So that was Dinos Not Assembled.
That's pretty cool. That actually sounds really cool. The art's amazing. I'll have to try it out one of these days. Mm-hmm. You know, when we can actually get together with friends.
When we can family again.
Alright, so my last game that I'm going to talk about is a game everybody's been talking about. I just recently picked it up around Christmas, because... Funny story about this one. My wife asked me what I wanted for Christmas, so I told her some board games and stuff like that. So she got all happy because she got a board game at Barnes & Noble. She's like, all right, I found it. I'm going to go get it. And she bought it. And then she comes back and looks at the list because she didn't have it on her. And she's like, oh, no. Oh. And so what she got me was Doom, the reprint by Gale Force 9 from back in the day from the old one, which is fine. I really do want to try that one. But the one I wanted was Dune Imperium. Yeah. And so she's like, just order it. I made a mistake, just order it. I'm like, it's fine. I'll get it. No, just order it. Okay. You're not going to tell me more than three times to order myself a war game?
She'll tell you at least two, but probably not more than three.
Yeah. So I went ahead and ordered and picked up Dune Imperium. And oh my god, I really had a blast with it. The combo of deck building and worker placement is such an interesting way to combine the two mechanisms that I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's made me want to see the new movie. I haven't read any of the books. I've only seen the old 80s movie because my dad's a big sci-fi fan. I enjoyed it for what it was, but it's an old 80s sci-fi movie, so.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, and I'm more than likely going to buy that upgrade pack to make it really nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. By speaking of Dune, have you seen the new announcement from Portal Games?
No.
They announced that they're making a Dune game. I think it's based off of their detective line.
That's going to be kind of interesting. I mean,
I think. They just sent it out in an email. They announced it at PortalCon this last weekend.
It'd be intriguing. I don't know how the whole rights are working, because Dune Imperium is based off the new movie that should have been out, but isn't going to be out until later this year.
Right.
Middle of this year. I don't know exactly when. But, so, we'll see. Because the old one that just got reprinted looks like it's based off the original movie. So.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
Right. So, my last game that I'm going to talk about, and it's technically two games, and I'm not going to talk about them long. I'm just going to show them right here. Because, Daniel, you know what one of these are. At least you will when you see it. But I just wanted to share with this. Take a look at this. Lemonade Stand Empire.
Interesting. Is it? I don't know what those are.
It's lemonade, iced tea, and sweet tea. This is a prototype that I've been working on that I just ordered a new copy
now
of.
I see who it's by.
Yep. And these cards, like, they turned out really well. They have stands. I'm not going to go into it, but it's basically like a... It's a drafting game. You get ingredients, you make drinks with it. Lots of ways to score points.
Our podcast to plug your stuff.
I'm not... it's not for sale yet. It's not even fully developed yet, I don't think. But I have a physical copy that makes me excited. But this is one that I know I haven't told you about. This is one that I've been working on a little bit. It's called Corporate Jargon. The idea of this game... It has dry erase boards in it. This is my first attempt to make a dry erase board game. You have, like, generic corporate charts. You're given a few keywords of jargon words.
Where'd you get to do the art?
Oh, open source, of course.
That
it's not too bad, you know. All the jargon cards have, like, a really sad businessman on the back of it looking sad at his desk, you know. The victory points are paper clips, you know. But... See, there we go. I'll show that real quick. There's a little sad businessman, you know. So the idea is very simple. You're given a completely nonsensical corporate question. Like, what can develop efficient internal and organic sources? And you have to use jargon words and generic corporate charts to explain the best answer to a nonsensical corporate job in order to become promoted. I love it.
Yeah, I'm good.
It may or may not have been inspired by jobs I've had before.
I was going to say, some of that artwork kind of reminds me of Dilbert.
A little bit. I love me some Dilbert. I've played almost every board game that Dilbert has made. There is one that if one of our viewers ever finds, it's the Dilbert board game, where you're just basically killing jobs. Like, you never complete jobs. You just kill them. Like, by finding all the people to procrastinate enough until they just fail. Until your happiness... It has a really cool mechanism where your happiness and the boss's decline in happiness meet, and that triggers the end game when those two pieces meet on the score track. It's super cool. So if anybody knows where I can find a copy of that, let me know, because I want that game again in my collection. Anyway, we should get on to the episode.
Yes, please.
I thought that was a quick way for me to, instead of talking about a full-fledged game.
Yeah.
Oh, blatant self-promotion. Blatant self-promotion. No, I mean, not just that. Like, hopefully at some point in the future podcast, I'll have, like, fun announcements I can make. But we'll see. As for the episode today, though, speaking of designing games, that's my segue there.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
except for the designing games.
Ooh. Ow. Yikes. We're going to talk about our favorite designer dream teams and what we mean by dream teams. And I don't know if this was clear enough when we asked our group, because we had a whole one reply. And what we meant by it is, what are two designers that you don't normally see work together who would make a cool design team? Like, and of course they could have worked together in the past. We might even have some crossover with that, but
yeah.
We wanted to talk about, like, what two people do we think would actually be really neat to design together as a partnership to make a new game, and why. We decided to go with 8 this time to start aligning it with our top 8 debate. And so we'll give a quick description on each of those and explain why we think they would make a good team. Now, my back 8, these are not necessarily in any particular order, but my back 4 groups. I want to clarify, I don't know why I think they would make a good group. I think I know, like, that they would probably make a good duo for one reason or another, but I don't, there's nothing specifically that says that, so I'll explain those more when I get to them.
Yeah, I'll get into why I have mine the way it is. Let's just say my number 1, my number 2, my number 3 were the first dream team I thought of.
Yeah.
They instantly went in there, and I already knew their rankings.
Yeah.
And everything after that is just how I think, so more excited as I go. My number 8 is kind of my cheat, and I'll explain when that goes on in a minute.
Mine totally is too.
So I'm going to go over here, and we're going to talk about the one comment that we got on our thing, and Aaron mm-hmm. says he would like he likes both Bruno Patuti and mm-hmm. Cathala, and everything they make is normally an SMI, and they've already made a game together, Mission Red Planet. They've made quite a few games together.
Oh, yeah. The Brunos working together is a common thing, but that's good that he brought in an example. It's like, this is why they work well together. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we've heard Kramer and Kiesling, you know, they're a great duo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they're also great designers. And we talked
about it a little bit earlier when on my games I've been playing about the adventure games, Matthew Dustin and Phil Walker Hardy.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. All right, so do you want to go first or do you want me to?
You go ahead and go first because I got to look the other one.
That sounds good. So my number 8 duo that I think would be really phenomenal together, but it will never happen, and this is why it's my cheat, because one of them isn't alive anymore. I think, honestly,
Saxon, right?
Sid Saxon and Ken Byrne. Now, you probably don't know who Ken Byrne is, but he made a series of abstract strategy games called the GIF series, and he's made a few other games on top of that, but he's really solid into abstract strategy. And I consider him a legendary designer, in my opinion. He's still alive, I believe, and he's still making games, but he only makes... His last game was in 2017, and that was the most recent game since 2007. So,
wow.
He hadn't designed a game in that series for 10 years. But I think what he does, he makes games incredibly elegant, incredibly smart, and if you were to pair that with, like, the economics of Sid Saxon, yeah. I think that would make a really neat game. Yeah.
It'd be intriguing.
So that's technically my number 8.
All right, so time for my cheat, my number 8.
Okay.
My guys aren't dead. So my cheat for this is because it's not a designer, it's a design team.
And it's Prospero Hall. Yep.
With okay. Corey Konietzka. And hear me out.
Okay, I'll listen.
Corey is known about, like, those big, grandiose games. You got, like, your Fantasy Flight, your Twilight Imperiums, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Which I think are phenomenal games. Yeah, they're a bit long. But Prospero Hall is known for simplified, fun games that are really, yeah. case in point, Horrified or Back to the Future. So sure. those are real simple games, real easy to play, family friendly. I think those two getting together, making a... like a grandiose almost, but not super long, maybe an hour to 2 hour type game with Prospero Hall's IPs that they have a lot of, and his ability to make them so grand. I would love to see that happen. I would like to see like a maybe an alien style board game through the Prospero Hall line, kind of like Twilight Imperium, but like super slim down, not so bulky, but just allows for these big space battles and stuff like that. And Prospero Hall makes beautiful games. Horrified, really nice looking. The Tokyo Clash Godzilla game, really mm-hmm. great looking. Back to the Future, I love the art style on that. So I just love to see that family friendly meets that big hardcore gamer and see what they can come up with. That put that in a blender and let's see what happens.
Right, that'd be cool. I will give you a slight spoiler. I do not have Prospero Hall on my list.
Yeah, that's fine. I was debating whether to put them on my list.
Yeah.
But also another caveat that I made for my own list, for myself personally,
mm-hmm.
you're never going to see someone cross over. Like, I'm not going to use Corey Konietzka or Prospero Hall again.
Right, same here.
That's all I'm using.
Same here, yep. My next one is... this is one of those examples that I think that they would be able to make something really neat together. I can't even fathom what it would be.
Actually going to be my next one.
Yeah. I have the combination of the nature enthusiast and the farmer, as far as designers go. I have Hargrave and Rosenberg.
Interesting.
Now think about that for a minute, because Uwe Rosenberg comes up with some really neat farming games and stuff, and then... is it Elisa Hargrave or
Elizabeth
Hargrave? She takes nature and natural occurrences and makes them really enriching.
Yeah.
Combining those two, I think would be something pretty special.
You gotta land it this way with Elizabeth Hargrave. She made Wingspan, which just was gangbusters. Mm-hmm. It went nuts. As you can see above me, I enjoy that game so much. Mm-hmm. But then she followed that up with Mariposas, and everybody fell in love with that one, too. So, yep. Not as big as Wingspan, but whatever is really going to be that transcending game, like right. Wingspan. But she still followed it up with another hit.
Right, and exactly. And see, and that's...
There's Rosenberg, who's...
Yeah, every Rosenberg. Game he makes is Farm. Yeah. No, but imagine, like...
Or Polynomials.
Or Polynomial Farms. Yes. No, but imagine, like, the animals in there having, like, a weird, like, a cool history, and then him making, like, this enriching, like, mechanisms to go along with it. Not putting down Elizabeth Hargrave's mechanisms, they're solid, but
yeah.
I love the idea of, like, building, like, a ranch and stuff, using these animals, and then actually having it be, like, more accurate and enriching because of it. But so that's my number seven.
So my number seven is along the same lines of your number seven, where it's I just want to see what happens. And so, you got Bruno Cathala, the man of mechanisms, who has got a plethora of games out there. He played a wide variety of his mechanisms. You got Five Tribes, Witches of Moncala. You got, what is that other one? The one we played where he's telling a play. I can't remember the name.
You had to put me on the spot. Shakespeare?
Historia?
Historia. Yeah. Or Historia.
Yeah, it's so different than what you normally get from Bruno Cathala.
Mm-hmm.
And then I paired him off with someone that you wouldn't expect, Isaac Vega.
Okay.
I'm curious. What they can do. Vega's ability to blend mechanism with a good theme, because he took part in Dead Winter.
Okay.
He was one of the designers on that. I know you're not a fan of the card game, but Phoenix Ashes.
Oh, I like Magic the Gathering a lot.
Yes, of course. I know you don't like Magic Bots, but
no, it's a solid game. I like it.
But it's a solid design, and I mm-hmm. would like to see Isaac Vega and Bruno Cathala. I want to see what they could do together. I don't know what they would come up with. I don't know how it would win with these two different types of designers, but I would be eager to see it.
Okay.
I was kind of torn between Isaac Vega with him and Jonathan Gilmore.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I just went with Isaac Vega just because I would like to see it.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. The next one, speaking of magic butts.
Is this the actual magic, Richard Garfield?
Richard Garfield is one of them. But I would want to see him paired up with another person who I think does really great head-to-head, two-player strategy card games. And he's just one of... We've had him on our podcast, and he's one of just, like, the funnest people to talk to. He's super cool, lives up in Albuquerque, owner of his own company, Level 99. I am talking Brad Talton. I think him and Garfield could put together one of the neatest, like... It doesn't even have to be collectible. It could be a living game, expandable game. I think if they just put something together... Because you take BattleCon and Magic. Magic is kind of luck-based, but it's really efficient and there's a lot of depth to it. BattleCon is the definition of strategy. Like chess.
I would actually take away Magic as much as people like that, but mix it with like something like Keyforge?
Keyforge, yeah. No, seriously, like... Those two can make such an amazing, like, head-to-head card game. Yeah, I want to see that.
I'd play it. No, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Oh, I'd stop what I'm doing to play it. Absolutely.
All right, so...
That's my number six. Yeah.
You want to figure this out? It's our first crossover. One designer.
Okay, I'm going to ask Elizabeth Hargrave.
Yep.
I knew you were going to have Hargrave on your list.
Yeah, I really enjoy her designs.
Yeah.
Especially Wingspan. If you look at Mariposa, I want to get it. I haven't played it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Elizabeth Hargrave. But you probably haven't heard of this name. Justin A. Wilson.
Okay.
The designer of Everdell.
Okay. Alright.
Wingspan meets Everdell. I like the fact that they both do simple mechanisms and make beautiful games. Because Everdell, it's a tableau building game with worker placement on it. But it's a lot going on, and I mentioned this, when you hear it later in our topic debate.
Yeah.
It's a simple game, but it's not as simple to master. You have to figure out the mechanism.
Yeah, the cliche, easy to learn, lifetime to master. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I would love to see what they would do, because it would probably be one of the most beautiful games ever created. Their styles mesh would be an interesting concept. And with you, when you're talking about the nature of the farmer, I just think this would be some sort of beautiful nature game that will tell a beautiful story. And I would look forward to that.
Yeah.
And as you can see behind me, I got one of my Everdale trees. So right. A little hint for you.
Yeah. Give some spoilers there. A little Easter egg, if you will. I'll let you try and guess my next two designers, because I feel like you'll be able to guess them. And once again, this is the last of the, I don't know what they would do together, but I feel like it would be awesome. One designer we've had on the podcast.
Well, that really narrows it down.
Well, I mean, it narrows it down to a rough handful, but we have had him on the podcast.
Okay, I need a second clue about that, because there's been a lot.
You've already spoke about one of his games, even though it's not his game. Come on, it's above your head, like he publishes
Stegmaier, okay.
Jamie Stegmaier, and who I think is actually a really prolific designer, and you and I have talked like how much we would like to get him on our podcast before, and he was a very awesomely vocal voice of Seamon for the longest time.
Yeah, no, they would do a great series together.
Stegmaier and Eric Lang. Think about that for a minute. Think about how meaty, how that would be a massive game, first off. It would be...
Oh, no, it would be, yeah. If you just look at what Scythe did in Rising Sun or Blood Rage,
yeah. Imagine Blood Rage and Scythe put together. Like, just... Ow! But, like, imagine all of the possibilities of just, like, insane that could go. Yeah. So, that's... Once again, I don't know why I think they would go well together. From here on out, I'm going to be talking about, like, mechanistically and their style of designs and why they pair up. But that's the last one of the... I would totally play it. Like, if you... I don't even consider either of them necessarily my favorite designers. They're both really good, and I respect everything that they've made. But put together, I'm intrigued.
No, I get it. I would enjoy
it. I have a feeling we'll be talking about maybe either of them later. We'll see.
So, this one is like designers thrown together to see what would happen next floor. Makes sense. I don't know how they would make sense, but I think they make sense. But this one, I don't know. This one is the blender that I was talking about, but I think it would be great. One of them designed a game that you actually don't like, but everybody else does.
I can name a lot of names, and I'm not gonna right now, just in case.
I own it, and our mutual friend Don owns the same one, and we played it with both of us.
Is it the... I'm not remembering his name, but I think I know the... Is it the game that I actively loathe?
Yes, it's Architects, but it's Shim Phillips.
Oh, no, that wasn't what I was thinking. See, that's why I'm not naming names. Because I might eliminate somebody, or like one or two designers from never coming on the podcast because of name dropping. Shem Phillips, he's an awesome designer.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying.
I just hate that one game.
One game of his that you don't really like.
But it's not just, that's not just him, though, right? Didn't he work with somebody else?
Yeah, he's got someone else on that, but I just went with Shem Phillips.
So it's whoever the other designer is that, no, I'm just kidding. That's probably not true. I'm just kidding.
And the other designer we've had on the podcast is,
Shem Phillips and Davio?
No,
okay. Probably not Brad.
I'm a big fan of this game. And so we got to talk to him right before a Kickstarter, just after one Kickstarter was done.
Mateka?
Mateshka? Keith Mateka and Shem Phillips.
Yeah. Okay.
You got your role player, you got your Western Kingdom series, or your Raider series, whatever. He's coming up with a third series, so we'll see what happens there.
Right.
But I just think this would be an interesting combo of someone who's really playing around with the worker placement aspect of games, and someone who can, I know he's using it from Dungeons and Dragons, but has made a really good world that a lot of his games are tied into, even things that he doesn't design. You look at Cartographers, not a game that he publishes, but not designed, but it fits in that little world that he's making. Role Player Adventures is coming out, and more Cartographers and stuff like that. So I just think it'd be interesting to see the world building that these two could do together with some interesting combination of mechanisms.
Okay. I see you on that one. Yeah, okay. I'd play it. Yeah, because I really do... Most of Shem Phillips' games, I do like a lot of the mechanisms in it. I just really dislike one game because of one mechanism. That's really all.
Like the sequel to it, Paladins. I haven't played Viscounts yet, so I can't tell if that one's better.
I would try Viscounts. Absolutely. I would try Viscounts. 100%. I'd be willing to. But if it had that same, like forcing people to be jerks to each other, then it's like, nah, then he's gonna decline. Alright, going into my number four, now I have designers that I think are very similar in their style of design and mechanistically, and I think they'd be able to make something very interesting with it. I will, you know what, I'll buy you a drink if you guess either of these two, but I do think both of these guys come up with really interesting takes on classic mechanisms, if that makes sense. Like, every game that I've played from either of these designers, they've taken a very simple concept and reworked it in a really interesting, new, and innovative way.
I've only heard you describe two people like that. I'm probably going to be way off, but Phil Walker Harding?
It's not Phil Walker Harding. I knew you were going to say that. It's not him.
The only other one I've ever heard you describe that is Rainer Knizia.
Not him either. So, I know neither of these guys, it's unlikely. One of them is the designer of Kodama and Space Junk. It's Daniel Solis.
Okay.
He takes like really interesting things. Like, that's a Mon Cala mechanism that's going in different ways. Mm-hmm. I like the set collection in Kodama. Like, everything I've played from him, I've really enjoyed. And then the other guy is the designer of Istanbul, and there's a space game that he made a long while ago. And he's one of those names that, if you say it, I'm down to play a game with his. Rüdiger Dorn.
What was the one we did play of his? Was it the one with the maps?
Maybe.
Where you're trying to get through, like, the temples or something like that. Oh. Making a tile-laying pathway.
He made the one that was nominated for the Spiel a couple years ago. I think Luxor.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's a Rüdiger Dorn. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Imagine, like, Space Junk and Luxor combined together. Like, you see where I'm going with this. Like, they're very simple, but, oh, like, that's super innovative in a way. Like, just the hand of cards in Luxor where you're picking either the left or the right one and you add the card to the middle, that's cool. Then you're ultimately going wrong. Like, going past a certain part to get another adventurer into there. No matter how far all your adventurers are, drafting the right card. Like, it's just, there's so much cool, thought-provoking ideas in that game. And same with Space Junk. That's what really sold me on Daniel Solis. It has some really neat stuff in it. I love that discarding a number to jump the other way. Like, that number of spaces, that's super cool. I love that.
Yeah, it's neat. I did like, Space Junk. It was an interesting game.
Yeah.
So I think it would be a pretty decent combo.
Yeah, yeah. So Daniel Solis and Rüdiger Dorn. Work it out. Hey. Figure it out. I want it.
My number four is a lot like your number four. But we're talking about simplified, streamlined game designers.
Phil Walker Harding?
Yep.
Okay.
I don't know if you're actually going to get the next one.
Probably not. Because I don't think you're going to pick Knizia.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
We've already talked about his game.
Oh, was it one that we played?
No, that wasn't in our play, but we did talk about the game.
Because I was about to say Dunstan, but we already talked about his game earlier. Is Stegmaier? Are you talking Stegmaier?
Nope.
Then, you know what, just give it to me. I've taken too many guesses.
I'll just give you the last hint. Gollum.
Oh, Emerson Matsuchi, that's a smart idea. He's not on my list either, and I can't believe I didn't think of his.
Yeah, he's really smart. I was thinking about this because I was looking at my silver and gold box, and I was like, who would Phil Walker Harding go good with that he hasn't already worked with along those lines? I'm not going to book him on the list because I'm not a huge fan of his games. I understand a lot of people like him. That's fine. But Emerson Matsuchi, again, both of these are very simple game makers. You got your Baron Park, which is a tie of a polynomial mm-hmm. game. You have Golem, or Century, which yep. is a engine building game, the very first one, with the other ones adding like pick up and deliver and worker placement, but still very simple mm-hmm. games. You look at Phil Walker Harding's big game, Emotep.
Yep.
Very easy to get. And I would love to see what they would do, what mechanism they would streamline, just tear it down to its basic necessities and see what they come up with. Because I don't know what it would be, but it would be it. Everybody would fall in love with it. It'd probably be one of the highest rated games of that year when it comes out, just because they're really good at making games simple for everybody to grasp. So just to see what they come up with, like maybe they'll make a bluffing game that I'll enjoy just because they're that simplified.
Yeah. Okay. I'd be in to try that. Okay.
Yeah, so I knew you were going to get the other one, but I thought that was an interesting combo.
Yeah, and I'm kind of sad. Now that I think about it, I think Matsuchi would really make some really neat games. I really do. Okay, so this next one. Feel free to take a guess on this. These are actually two very different designers, but they have been in the industry for decades, and they're still doing games, like probably 30 years now for each of them. One of them made one of the biggest hits ever, and he's made a lot of other games that I've enjoyed quite a bit of. In fact, one's over my shoulder, and I don't know if you're going to get it or not. But it's one of these ones. And we'll see.
Which ones?
You're looking away. One of these ones. And I really like his designs. He's a classic designer. He does some pretty simple stuff. But the other designer is brilliant at adding story into games and refining games that have already been done. And I will give you one very obvious hint. We've had him on the podcast.
Rob Davio and Stefan Feld?
Close. Rob Davio is the one I picked. But the other one is of Ticket to Ride fame. I think him and Alan Moon would make a really, really great game. I would love to see something like a Ticket to Ride Legacy.
Oh, but, I didn't even think of Alan Moon,
but,
honestly.
And that's fine. I mean, I was pointing at Mammoth Hunters, which is the reason, because that's an Alan Moon game. But I think a lot of his mechanisms, I would love to have just, like, a more story-enriching, like, kind of like geography game. Like, that would be super fun. Like, imagine Ticket to Ride as you're explaining the cities, or like traveling the USA and stuff. Like, that would just be so cool. Like a Route 66 game. I don't know. I'm just throwing ideas out there, spitballing. But that would be super fun to see Rob Davio add that, like, cool story background, and having games like Alan Moon makes tell a story.
Okay. I can see that. Oh, that would be interesting. I don't know. I didn't even think of Alan Moon. I was looking at my Ticket to Ride box, and I was like, drew a blank. I'm like, okay, who else will get over here?
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, I mean, he's been making fewer games, but he was a big name for a long time.
Game. He hit his jackpot with Ticket to Ride, so now he's just like, okay, we'll just do this map, and then we'll do this map.
Right.
Oh, 15-year anniversary for Ticket to Ride Europe. Just did the 10 over here. So right. It's like, that's where he's making his money now.
And rightfully so. It's a brilliant game, in my opinion. I understand why some people don't like it, but
no, I actually really enjoy Ticket to Ride. I think I prefer Europe more than I'm probably the only one that prefers Europe out of our group, just because I like the ticket booths. I forget what they're actually called.
But yeah,
I like that train station. Someone's route to help finish your route.
Yeah, I mean, I do own Ticket to Ride Europe, so.
Well, I know, but you. When in doubt, you pull out Ticket to Ride, the first one, because it's so simple, for one thing.
Yeah.
And also, it's easier for our area, because more people know the U.S. map than they would Europe.
Sure. Yep, that makes sense. So yeah, that's my number three, Davio and Alan Moon.
So, my number three here, one of them has already been mentioned, and it's another crossover between us.
So, wait, how many crossovers have we had so far?
We had... You had Phil Walker Harding on yours, no, huh?
No.
Elizabeth Hargrave. And what this one's going
to
be.
Okay, so we're coming up to the solid two now.
You've already mentioned him.
Stegmaier?
Stegmaier.
Yep.
And now I have mentioned this other designer, and it is in my What We've Been Playing.
Matthew Dunstan. No, I'm kidding. Isaac Childress.
I think those two, along the same lines you were talking about with Stegmaier and Lane, would make a phenomenal game. I think it would be really well produced, highly thematic game with Euro mechanisms, and it could be James Stegmaier's first co-op game, in all honesty. I think those two could make a phenomenal, it doesn't even have to be a dungeon crawl, it could be like a space game. Imagine them doing like an epic space game along the lines of maybe with mechanisms of Scythe or something like that, a story to it, and co-op where we're fighting an alien invasion or something like that. I just think it would be a grandiose Euro style mechanisms, not a lot of dice in it, or at all, kind of like Moonhaven.
Yeah.
I just think those two would make an interesting mechanism game that just hits all my cylinders.
Yeah. You know, Isaac Childress, he's interesting to me, but you know what I want to see him do? I want to see him make just like a really simple card game. Hear me out. I think he could. The cards in Gloomhaven, I think, are really smart. I would love to see him just make pack it like 60 cards and just make a card game out of it, you know? Like,
I'll make a Gloomhaven trick-taking game.
There you go. Now that would be something, wouldn't it? Gloomhaven, the trick-taking game.
It's somewhat low. It's number 3 on my list. I like both of these guys. They're probably some of my favorite designers or business people in that matter. But I have stuff that I think would just be phenomenal together.
Yeah.
The next two.
Cool. All right. Good luck guessing my next two. It won't be that hard for you. Because one of them is one of my favorite designers of all time.
Did I already mention his name when I thought it was something else?
Yes.
Stefan Feld.
Yep. Now, let's take a guess on the other one. Because the other guy who's on my list of designers, I feel he takes games that are already more or less solid in the market, and he adds some amazing new flavors to them to make it not only his own style, but make it really, really great for gamers. A lot of his games, the ones that are more famous, are inspired in a way from other games. Like, I'm not gonna say they're completely taken from him, because he adds enough of his own spin where they are definitely his unique taste to it. We've had him on the podcast as well. Come on, you got it, Daniel. All you gotta do is think of our past podcast people.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say.
He even made a joke about how, this game is in no way inspired by this.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. It's either Kurt Covert.
It's not Kurt.
Or
Kurt's a great guy, but it wasn't him.
I can't think of his name, but Fireside.
No, it's not Justin DeWitt either.
Oh, okay, then it's gotta be, the one that did the pirate game, and I can't think of that name off the top of my head right now.
Dead Reckoning?
Well, yeah, Dead Reckoning, yeah.
John DeClair, yes.
Yeah, now, John DeClair.
Now think about John DeClair's take on a Stefan Feld game. Like, imagine he took something like Castles of Burgundy and then added some new levels to it. You know, it doesn't have to be like a mega heavy Feld, right? It doesn't have to be. In fact, it probably shouldn't be. But imagine something like Castles of Burgundy or even In the Year of the Dragon, and then adding his own flavor to it. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say card crafting, but like he makes enough really unique mechanisms that I think the point salad in it would be, it would, oh my god, it would evolve into a whole new level of just really fun. I don't know how it would ever work, but Stefan Feld and John DeClair would be amazing together.
it'd be an interesting game, I'll tell you that much.
It'd be interesting. You would play it. You'd be in 100%.
I'm not playing with someone with AP. So.
No, nor should you. But yeah, we would totally play it.
Hey, you ready for some more crossovers?
Yes.
This is a double crossover.
Okay, I'm guessing one is Feld. Okay.
Here's my hint for you, and you'll get it right away. Point salad, polynomial game.
Okay, Rosenberg. Yep, I saw his name, and I'm like, I bet it's Rosenberg. Yep. Feld and Rosenberg. The kings of the Euros. The point salads.
That's actually legitimately what I put here. King of Euros.
Yep. Yep.
They're all prolific designers, and it's not like these big grandiose games. They both made small games that have done well. So
yes.
It would be so interesting just to see how this would work with them doing it. And like I said, for the joke, point salad polynomial game.
Yep.
But I'd still play the mess out of it because it's probably going to be really, really good.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. Come on, that's not going to lie. They're going to put a theme on it, but it's not really going to matter for the game. It's just going to be amazing to play. And this is what we're going to be doing the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we just demonstrated about 2 hours of what this game would be.
Yeah, and I honestly think it would be an amazing game. And again, this is why I think, as much as I like Childress and as much as I like Stegmaier, I would just go out of my way. Even if this was in Europe, I would import it and find someone to translate the rules for me to play this game, because that's how intriguing it would be.
Cool. All right. Yeah, I would totally play that, of course. Like, I thought that was too much, like, a fish in a barrel. That's why I didn't put the two together. But...
Oh, screw that. I'm going to shoot those fish in the barrel, because, honestly, I want to play that game. I think it would be amazing.
Well, I'm immediately going to eat my own words, because you've already said both of these designers that are on my top one. Designer Dream Team. And I think
Phil
you've
said...
Huh?
Phil Walker Hardy.
And? And I think you even said the other one back to back.
Oh, is it? Keith Mateka?
No.
Then I don't know.
No, you have... It wasn't on your list. I'm saying... Oh. But when guessing mine, you said this other designer back-to-back with Walker Harding.
Oh. Yeah, I don't remember it now, so...
Reiner Knizia. Oh, of course. No, they are both... Okay, so here's why. Here's why, okay? I'm going to describe exactly why, and you're going to play the game as soon as it comes
out. Also, I did call your number one. I just called it the wrong spot.
You called both of my number one. You were just... you were too preemptive. No. Knizia comes up with very simple, but incredibly unique and innovative mechanisms. I can teach you one of his games in a matter of seconds, but the mechanism that's involved with it will not be anything that you've seen before. And you'll think to yourself, how hasn't this been made yet? Now, granted, you make 800 games, you're going to get some of those unique mechanisms, guaranteed. Like, I mean, the wife and I just played last night a round of Age of War that uses, like, the Elder Sign style dice rolling. Very simple. But it's a brilliantly simple, amazing, streamlined game. Now, pair that up with the designer of Sushi Go and Baron Park and all the others that, you know, Gingerbread House... Like, that games that are so elegant and simple that can build off of each other where you don't... You learn them in seconds, and you're like, alright, I know how to play, and then I'm playing it. And they're so enriching. They are made to work together, and I want to see it happen. I will personally front money to do it.
I'd rather have Harding and Matsuchi.
That's fine. That's not far off, but I think Knizia is a better fit for him, just personally. Yeah. So that's up to 5 crossovers now. And on to your last.
We're about to hit 67. You've actually mentioned both of these in your list.
Okay. Richard Garfield?
No.
Eric Lang, then, is definitely one of them. Okay. And,
They might have worked together before, but...
Davio?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, go on. I see this.
I just think about it. You mentioned it before. Eric Lang, big, grandiose games. You look at Rising Sun, you look at Blood Rage, mm-hmm. you look at Cthulhu Death May Die, where he made his own lore out of Cthulhu stuff. Sure. So, and you put a legacy aspect with it with Rob Davio, who... And it doesn't necessarily have to be a legacy. It could be a campaign-style game. I think it'd be phenomenal with these two. You don't even have to do... like Rising Sun or Blood Rage, they can come up with their own game with these big, grandiose minis.
Yeah.
It could be a warring, it could be a co-op. I just think these two would make probably one of the more amazing legacy-style games out there. Yeah, just because they're both very prolific and very strong at what they do. When you mix those together, and I put it here, it would give you great minis, with great storytelling, and everybody likes those kind of games nowadays. I am a huge, if you notice by my list here, I'm a huge fan of blending Amerithrash style or Ameritrash style games with Euro mechanisms, because I love really big, grandiose thematic games. That's why Gloomhaven is at the top of my list. And Euro mechanisms, because there's not a lot of luck involved. I like dice rolling, but sometimes if you get a little much, if your dice aren't going in your favor, whereas for something like Gloomhaven, it's card play. So imagine doing something like that with a great style blending of the European style or Euro style in Ameritrash. Yeah, there might be dice rolling in it, but it might be mitigated. Let us do it like a dice forged kind of thing, where it's like, oh, you get to add these to your dice. All of Rise of Queensdale, where you get to add and make your dice
add stickers better
as you go along. I think it would be amazing.
Okay.
In all honesty, and this was the first one that popped in my head when we thought of this topic.
Like,
Davio Lane, I think they would make an amazing game.
You know, this really kind of personifies, like, the different styles of games. Like, because you and I have a lot of crossover as far as games that we really, really love and designers that we enjoy. But, like, this kind of, like, divides that a little bit.
Yeah, it's like, I want this game with this game. Oh, no, you'd be better with this guy.
Yeah. We'll just have to do, like, a fantasy draft and just see what happens in the future. Oh, man. Well, that was a fun episode. I really wish we would have had more people joining on the conversation, but c'est la vie, you know?
We're going to have to get back. We're going to have to regrow. We've taken too many breaks, and it's understandable.
Yep.
We just have to go back to that grind.
That's exactly right. So if you listen to this in the future, let us know down in the comments, or let us know, send us a message, send us an email, whatever. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you think are good designer dream teams. And why? Because we'd love to talk about it. Maybe in a future episode, we might revisit this. So, if you ever want to watch this live, you certainly can. Join us at twitch.tv/everydayboardgames.
And as always, all videos are re-uploaded on YouTube at Everyday Board Games Podcast. If you do find us on YouTube, give us a like and subscribe.
And you can send us an email directly if you have ideas for the show or want to pitch us whatever, I don't know. Or just say hi. Do it.
Yeah.
Send us an email at ebgboard... No. What is it now?
It's everydaybordgames2020.
Everydayboardgames2020 @gmail.com.
It's been a while, folks.
It's been a while. I don't email myself.
You can find all audio versions on most podcasting platforms under Everyday Board Games Podcast, which includes Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, and Podbean. I kind of slowed down on trying to get in on Apple. I will try to get going again, but with the break and, you know, Christmas and the holidays, I took a break on that. You can also find us on Twitter at EBG Podcast.
So, thank you for joining us today on Everyday Board Games. As always, I've been Daniel.
And I've been Daniel.
And we want to thank you for tuning in.
Have a good one.